Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. My guest today is Matt Driscoll. From 2001 to 2009, he served as the mayor of the city of Syracuse. Currently, he's president and CEO of the New York State Environmental Facilities Corporation, a public benefit corporation. He was nominated to this position by Governor David Patterson and renominated by Governor Cuomo. Mayor Driscoll, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
There are lots of different things I want to ask you, so I'm going to cover the waterfront a bit, if that's okay with you. Let's start with the city of Syracuse and environmentalism. Environmentally related development issues are clearly what your own policy and political brand has been. So why do you think the environmental theme took hold and gained traction in Syracuse initially?
Well, you know, I think that certainly it was an important element of not only my administration, but a lot of folks who really felt that we should embrace the growth in environmental sciences. We happen to have one of the most prestigious universities here in the country with ESF as well that focuses in the environmental world. And so there was lots of opportunity, to look at ways that we could collaborate and really position Syracuse and Central New York as a leader in green science and technology.
And how would you assess what Syracuse as a city has been doing in that regard since you left office?
Well, you know, I think we really undertook a lot of programs early on. And in fact, Syracuse had the luxury of being named the 17th greenest city in America. Since that point in time, I think the current mayor has been focused on other areas, although, albeit there's lots of folks who are still really zeroed in on this, the County of Onondaga. Certainly, County Executive Joni Mahoney has really been at the forefront in terms of water quality initiatives with Onondaga Lake cleanup. And that's been verified and validated nationally on many occasions. So we're really, continue to move the pendulum forward here in Onondaga County with respect to clean water.
And what about the future of green urban planning? There's a lot of emphasis placed on that. What do you think are the most important new frontiers in that area?
Well, I think when we talk about sustainability, it's important to do that in a very thoughtful and planned way. And, protecting – one of the things that makes us unique is certainly the geography here and that, you can be in an urban setting like Syracuse or Onondaga County, and within 15 minutes you can be, in wide open spaces abounded by many lakes. And so it's important that we plan accordingly. The issue of sprawl is an important one. We have large volumes of infrastructure already in place, albeit old, but in place that can support continued investment and growth that goes along with it, bringing it back to the center as opposed to taking away our rich farmlands and other green open spaces.
And tell me a little bit about the public benefit corporation that you're heading and how it works in these areas.
Right. Well, the Environmental Facilities Corporation is a public benefit corporation that really focuses on clean water initiatives. We were established in 1987 under the Clean Water Act, and each state has a state revolving loan fund. We are the administrator of that. And so, what we do is we finance projects for cities, counties, towns, villages, and some private sector entities addressing water quality and environmentally sustainable issues. And so we're very involved across the state. Obviously, when you talk about infrastructure, whether it's sewer or drinking water, there's lots of work to be done. And so we are the primary folks who help finance that. And we can do so in a much more advantageous way than, say, a local city like Syracuse or any other can go out and do on their own through general obligation bonds.
So this public benefit corporation is a type of public authority.
It's a type of a public authority. I always tell people, keyword benefit, public benefit, because as I said, we can provide financing for communities really in a far less expensive way than they can go out on their own. Where we can do market rates, we do blended rates, we do have some grant associated with that. There's 0% financing for communities that are deemed hardship, and that's really one of the factors is the medium household income that plays into how a financial assessment is done for a community. But whether it's a straight financial package or a blend of different programs, we really can reduce a community's cost to address their infrastructure needs.
Well, one of the things that I wanted to ask about that particular aspect of the structure of the benefit corporation is we do read a lot and hear a lot about public authorities being part of the fiscal problem for the state of New York, because even though the state budget has to be balanced every year, these corporations can issue bonds and therefore incur state debt that then sort of off of those books. So there's been a lot written about that. And I, one question I was curious to put to you is, now that you're in the position that you're in, has your opinion about public authorities in that sense changed at all?
I didn't share that opinion when I was mayor.
Okay.
So no, it's not.
Okay.
You know, just to be clear, our corporation, this public benefit corporation, our indebtedness does not count against the state books. But because we issue debt, we're able to be able to help communities address their infrastructure needs that they might not always be able to do. We're a $13 billion corporation, so we have very deep pockets, and we're able to use our AAA bond rating to really get the best buy for communities across the state when they address those infrastructure needs. So, you know, there's a real benefit in terms of the things that we can do separate from the state. We do not receive a state appropriation in terms of our administrative end. There is a match to the federal government. The federal government sets aside money each year in the Clean Water Act and the Drinking Water Act to address, you know, drinking water programs as well as sewer infrastructure projects, wastewater treatment facilities nationally.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Matt Driscoll, former mayor of the city of Syracuse and currently president of the New York State Environmental Facilities Corporation. Let me ask you another question about environment and environmental policy. How would you rate the Obama administration's work so far in the area of protecting the environment?
Yeah, I think that they've been, you know, rather steady in terms of how they've approached the environment and environmental needs. There's new ground that they're plowing through when you look at the Chesapeake Bay watershed. You know, when that's been a priority for this current administration and how states like New York and Pennsylvania and others that kind of funnel into that are being impacted. All of those details still are not yet worked out. But, you know, I think that they've kept a straight eye on the environmental mission, and it's important, frankly, nationally speaking, that we continue to do so, especially when you're talking about infrastructure improvement. You know, it's nice when people talk about roads and bridges, and those are the things we see above ground, and they're probably, you know, easier to sell, if you will, in terms of the political process. But it's really the underground infrastructure, which is the backbone of any community. So, you know, if you want to retain or grow your commerce, you have to have a system that works and that protects the public's health. And that's why, although we don't see it, the underground systems for infrastructure dealing with drinking water and clean water are extremely important for the health and vitality of communities, not only now, but over the course of the next 100 years.
And you're a member of the governor's cabinet. I have a couple questions I wanted to ask you related to that. First, just generally, what's your sense of his leadership and decision-making style?
I've been extremely impressed, and I had the good fortune of knowing the governor while he was attorney general, and I worked closely with him while I was mayor. He's really brought continuity to the state of New York, and more so than that, he's brought a plan. And, you know, he really has been very pragmatic politically, I think. He understands that New York State needs to be reinvented in terms of the business model. He's done a lot of creative things in that end. You know, he's reduced the tax bracket for middle class. First time in 58 years. It's the lowest it's ever been for middle class in 58 years. Creating these regional economic development councils, it was just a brilliant move because it's really getting people to work together in the larger audiences on local levels. And these are groups historically that, frankly, haven't always done so. But under this process, they need to come together so that everybody's working towards the same conclusion, which is to be, you know, successful in that process.
And one of the things that he named you to was co-chair of the Upstate Storm and Flooding Recovery Task Force. This was to deal with the disaster response in the aftermath of Hurricane Irene, as I understand it.
That's correct.
I was curious, based on your experience there, what your impression of the reaction to Sandy has been so far?
Well, you know, I think we learned a lot of lessons, you know, with Irene and Lee, and that was, you know, these devastating weather events really bring a lot of havoc to communities. We saw massive destruction, certainly through the southern tier, up through the Hudson Corridor, in fact, even up into Essex County and the Adirondacks. And so the issue of stormwater runoff, stormwater management, its impact on infrastructure was brought to the forefront, as well as the challenge in communication and the lack of it. And so Sandy just really has exacerbated that. This is obviously the largest storm that's ever hit the Northeast in recorded history. 300,000 homes destroyed or impacted, 2,000 miles of roads destroyed. And so while we, you know, figure out how we're going to move forward with rebuilding, we want to make sure that we do that in a smarter way, in a more resilient way. So that's why mitigation will be a key element of these programs structured going forward. But, you know, by and large, the big thing I think that the governor learned, that I did, having witnessed this, firsthand, was really the lack of continuity across geographic locations and regions with emergency response and coordination and communication. So that's a big part of, you know, how we prepare ourselves in the future, and the governor's laid out a plan for just that.
My guest is Matt Driscoll. He's the former mayor of the city of Syracuse, and currently he's serving the state as the president and CEO of the New York State Environmental Facilities Corporation. Well, I got another question for you now about the governor, but I want to attach it to the current Syracuse mayor. I'm sure as a former mayor, you've been watching the back and forth over the pension issue with some interest. So I wanted to know, do you think that the mayor has a legitimate bone to pick with the governor over his pension proposal, which was essentially to let cities pay less now and more later?
You know, I think, first of all, what the governor's really trying to do is provide relief in the short term for folks who really are facing large obligations, as the state is as well. None of us know what's going to happen over the next, 15 years or so with the market, and that's really primarily what drives the pension system. So in the upfront, it gives communities an opportunity to reduce the amount they would otherwise be paying, and in the long term, really be able to work in the market conditions and continue to work forward, looking at how pension issues may be resolved. With respect to how she's addressing that, that's not for me to answer. I was always a person that believed and still do in, sitting down at a table with people and finding a compromise solution and, working things out. But, everybody's got a different way, and she's certainly entitled to her own opinion, no doubt about that.
Let me ask another question about it. I talked with Mayor Miner about this issue on a previous program, and she made the argument that she has been making frequently, and it's essentially this, that the state created this pension obligation for the cities, and it made it worse through some subsequent decisions that it made, and therefore it's got some responsibility for dealing with it. But I had a question I wanted to put to you related to that, to challenge that in a way. It seems to me that while that is true, what's also true is that the state didn't hire those workers. The city did, and the essential features of the pension system were known when the workers were hired. Mm-hmm. So is this not also a case of the city's lack of anticipating how the demographics and the tax base of the city would change relative to the public workforce? I mean, I would think this, in a sense, this is sort of on Syracuse, but it goes back, decades, I would guess.
Well, it does. It's an old set of challenges that were constructed in many cases 50 and 60 years ago. And so we're all living with it. And frankly, I don't think pointing the finger helps anything. But when you look at it from a city side as well, in terms of addressing the challenge of providing services in a geographic area, clearly that is always a challenge, as it is throughout the state of New York. But this construct of a pension system doesn't impact just cities. It impacts counties, and it impacts, in fact, the state of New York. The state of New York has employees as well. So this is a program or a process that was developed many years ago. Everybody needs to deal with it. It's really reflective, I think, of what's happened in the financial markets and the economy since 2007. I know a lot of people like to talk about 2008, but really the wind down began in 2007. And so that's where you've seen great challenges and stresses on local economies and state economies and national economies. In my opinion, the economic models that we once knew and prospered on for many years changed. And candidly, I think they're probably gone forever. It's a global economy. It's a different economy. So understanding that is really going to help us when we sit at the table together and find creative solutions going forward.
In case you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations, and I'm talking with Matt Driscoll. Well, when you were mayor, you were a member of Michael Bloomberg's group, Mayors Against Illegal Guns.
That's right.
So I also wanted to ask you, What's your view of the New York SAFE Act?
Well, me having dealt with, weapons firsthand and seeing what took place on our city streets and still does, I'm a supporter of it. I think there's a lot of misinformation out there. It's an emotional issue for people. I think it's a good thing. This does not impact hunters. If you want to go deer hunting or pheasant hunting or your target shooting, it doesn't impact you. It's really about high capacity assault weapons. If you think about it, the Second Amendment was developed at a time when, there was militia armies. There were no full-time police departments or an army, per se, when, the British may have been running down the road. They're not doing that any longer. So it's a different set of circumstances, but nonetheless a very important one that needs to be considered. But I think at the end of the day, this will help keep our streets safer. It will certainly let law enforcement officials know where weapons are. And that is clearly important because gun violence in cities in particular is at an all-time high, and it's important that we take a positive step forward. This act that the governor passed as well does have a mental health component to it also, which is very important from, the unfortunate incidents we've witnessed with Sandy Hook and others.
And if I've got the former mayor of Syracuse sitting in front of me, I've got to ask you a couple questions about destiny. So let me throw these at you. First of all, what do you think of the new expansion? Have you been in it?
I was just in it yesterday, as a matter of fact. I think it's awesome. I think the place was packed, as it will be. It's bringing an added element of retail and destination components that, were really helpful to the community. And I think if we think back, if we really kind of sit back and be objective about it, when the original mall was built, it really helped transform that particular area of the community. We know with the oil tanks and all of that. But since that time as well, you wouldn't have the interest in the Inner Harbor and other places close to that if not for, the development that's taken place there. So at the end of the day, I think it's going to be a beneficial project for the city of Syracuse and the county of Onondaga in terms of sales tax. It was the number one driver for 22 years, and I see that going forward for the next 20.
Well, you kind of anticipated my next question, I think, but I'll ask it anyway. So in a bottom line sense, did the taxpayers get their money's worth here?
Well, that's a subjective argument. I mean, in Syracuse, it's 50-50. 50% of the people want it and 50 don't. Here's what I'll say. When I first entered office and inherited a deal that was struck previously to me, there was no revenue to the city of Syracuse. None. Not from the build-out of that process or that projected destination resort area. And that's why it took 5.5 years. And at the end of that, the city of Syracuse was able to secure $60 million in upfront financing. That financing has gone a long way to help get Say Yes off the ground, build the O'Brien and Gear building downtown, Joe Hucko's project in Armory Square that's been completed. There's been a lot of key investment made in our community because of the funds there, and those funds continue to come to the city and the county each and every year, about $3.4 million to the city over the course of the next few years and some to the county as well.
If you could rewind the clock, do all this over again, is there something you might do differently on the destiny issue?
Well, that's a great question. boy, there was a lot that went on with that. Yeah, I think probably part of it would have been it's kind of the lessons learned. There was a lot of folks who were strongly advocating for that project and a lot that were against. Frankly, all of the local media, including the Syracuse newspapers, were huge proponents of that project. We tried to communicate, to them in terms of what really was on the table and what really was being developed in terms of the financial structure relative to a pilot and other components of that. And conversely, for the public, who in many cases was opposed to it. And so trying to find a better way to communicate that to two, although challenging, is one area that perhaps I would like to revisit.
And I had a question now, before we get to the three questions at the end, about your own political career. Mm-hmm. You initially became mayor when Roy Bernardi was appointed deputy secretary of HUD, and then you won two terms in your own right. And along the way and afterwards, your name has come up for several different other elected mm-hmm. positions, which you passed on. County executive was one. A member of Congress was another. So how have you sorted out these decisions? I'm always curious to know how public officials or potential public officials kind of weigh through these things?
Right. Well, I think we need to step back a little bit because before becoming mayor, I spent, 7.5 years on the city council, second district councilor, third district councilor, council president, and then 8.5 years as mayor. So when I left, I had spent nearly 17 years in local government, and frankly, I thought that was a pretty good run. I've not closed the door to anything going forward. I have to say I really, really enjoy working for Governor Cuomo because he's really brought a spirit of entrepreneurship to the state of New York. He's really looking at how he right-sizes it. I enjoy that. I'm very busy beyond just my role as president of EFC, as we've discussed here today. So I'm very busy, and I do enjoy that. But going forward, I still have many people talk to me about, other items, and I'll always keep an open ear, but I'm very pleased at doing what I'm doing now. And as I like to say to people, especially with the Environmental Facilities Corporation, we get to do meaningful things every day, and we make a difference in a community's lives. And so when I'm out traveling the state, I talk to a county executive or a mayor, I have a sympathetic ear for them having been in their shoes. And so we work extra hard to try to really help them address their challenges and make them successful in their own right as well.
And so you've been, as an elected official, you've been both a legislator and an executive.
Right.
And it often seems to be the case that public officials, elected officials, tend to sort of think of themselves as one or the other.
Right.
And I've talked to some folks that say, look, I'm a legislator by nature. Which one are you?
I am not a legislator by nature. I'm more comfortable, in the administrative end. Legislatures, very important. I was a legislator as well. But, there's one thing to propose things, and then there's another to make them work. I've always been a person of action. I've run my own businesses, and I've been successful in the city as well. And so I enjoy doing what I'm doing here. But if I had my druthers, it would always be the administrative end. I've always said if I'm going to be the captain of the ship and it's going down, I'd rather drive it than somebody else. So I prefer the administrative end.
Well, let me get to the three questions. First, what's the title of the chapter of life you're currently living?
Fortunate.
Second, what's your worst trait?
Impatience.
And finally, what professional or creative achievement in your life so far has surprised you the most?
That's a little tougher. I can't say that I'm too surprised. I've always had a real yearning for the environmental end of things. And we've worked very hard at it. The city of Syracuse, I think, did very well under our leadership. And I think I'm where I want to be. I think there's more to be done. I'd like to continue to stay involved in public service one way or the other and helping us address our environmental issues as well as social issues for people.
That was Matt Driscoll, Mayor Driscoll. Thanks so much for talking with me.
Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
I'm Grant Reher. Join me again next week on WRVO Public Media for more conversation in the public interest.
Support comes from the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University, dedicated to the study and practice of citizenship, leadership, and public governance. Information at campbellinstitute.org.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher. Associate producers include Bethany Wallowender, Kelly Coleman, John Fornoff, Stephanie Lee, Hennish Pullickel, and Sophia Celeste Tate, and recording engineer Tom Fazio. For more information on the Campbell Conversations, visit WRVO.org.